Hi, everyone. I'm Natalie Gochner, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center, and today, in a special edition of Both Sides of the Aisle, Shireen Gourbani on the left, and we have Carol Lear with the Utah State Board of Education.
Also on maybe other left, but we can talk about that. Welcome, Carol. We're so happy to have you here.
Thank you, and I've loved the opportunity. Thank you for asking me.
We wanted to do a special program on education because it's so important to our listeners.
It's so important. Certainly it touches all of our lives, whether we have kids in school or not in Utah. And I think there is, I actually think this is a place where, of course, we're seeing some, I would say some of the extremism in our politics taking root, but we're also seeing a lot of agreement, and we don't really talk about how much is actually that we agree that our schools should be strong, that most people in Utah choose their neighborhood school as their primary school. Kind of all of these ideas, I think, are going to be exciting. So, Carol, will you tell us a little bit? I know I kind of joked that you're also on the left, but you didn't always have to affiliate with a party in these state school board races. Can you tell a little bit about you, who you are, your district?
Sure. My name's Carol Lear. I grew up in the East Mill Creek area, and now I've lived in Salt Lake City for more than 40 years, actually 50 years. And I started my life after college as a school teacher out in Kearns, and that was a far cry from where I went to school at Olympus. So I gained a lot of awareness of what it was like, and especially Kearns in the 1970s, 60s, was a different place than it is now. And I taught school for 5 years, and then seeing my students move on, I thought, I want to do something different. And all I knew was law, because that's what my family is, are lawyers. And so I said, I think I'll go to law school. Luckily, I was on the cusp of women being accepted into law school pretty easily. But I walked in one day and took the LSAT, and then started law school. And interestingly, started law school pregnant with my oldest son, who's now a lawyer. And finished law school, worked for a nonprofit for a while. Then I went to work at the State Office of Education, it was called at the time. Worked there for about 30 years, and also was an adjunct professor at USU in their educational leadership program, and did a variety of other things. I did all the mom things. I have three children, and I worked in schools as well as supervised schools, which is sometimes kind of awkward, but
And then you ran for state school board at some point.
And then I decided after I retired to go into private practice representing school districts and charter schools, did that for 10 years. And in the middle of that, I said, I think I can change some of what I don't like about the State Board of Education. I'm going to run for the state board.
So just a reaction from me, how lucky we are as a state to have state school board members with your background.
Not
in detail, but on the school board, how many are there on the state school board? What's their makeup, male, female? Just a little bit of the detail.
Yeah, I think that would be helpful. Many people don't know much about it. There are 15 school board members. That hasn't always been the case. It's changed over the years. And it was a nonpartisan board until 2020. And actually, there was a lawsuit when I was a plaintiff, saying that the board should remain nonpartisan based on the Utah Constitution. We lost, unfortunately. So in 2020, it became a partisan school board, which in my view has become is a terrible thing. Mm-hmm. It's made it more divisive. It's made it dramatically more expensive to run for the school board. And it's heightened the animosity of board members. Now there are 13 Republicans and 2 Democrats, and that didn't change with the recent election, of course. I would say it's a split between very extreme right Republicans and moderate Republicans, and the two of us who are Democrats usually aligned.
Fascinating.
That's the makeup.
I remember my years on Capitol Hill when there were proposals to make school boards, political. And I guess remind our listeners, in the local government sensibility, there aren't a lot of partisan races.
Right. So your local Salt Lake City school district, they're nonpartisan. They're not running on a, on
local
a party.
Local boards are all still nonpartisan, although there's been talk of wanting to make those also partisan.
And correct me if I'm wrong. Tell me about the Salt Lake County Council.
Salt Lake County Council is also nonpartisan.
Yeah, you don't really, maybe our listeners don't think that because they think, oh, so-and-so's a Republican, so-and-so's a Democrat. But you run, the concept is that local government is, you know, taking care of stray animals, curb and gutter, I don't know, county health needs, whatever. Yeah. But it's not, they're not partisan issues so much. They're not ideological, but that's a different world, Carol, than we live in today.
Although our argument is usually that school issues are not usually partisan issues.
Yeah.
Everybody wants their children to have a good education. Most people believe in public schools as a basic community service. Kind of like the police department and the sanitation department. And so they serve communities, especially in rural areas. There's city and community and town centers. Yeah. Everybody goes to the football games and the carnivals and things like that. So I think there's a belief among the board members that they really shouldn't be partisan issues.
If I think about what the state school board does, uh-huh. I mean, you set academic standards, am I right?
That's right.
You manage the funds.
Right.
You support and provide oversight of the schools.
Right.
I'm just trying to get our listeners to think, do you think of that as a partisan activity or not?
Or not.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Okay, so we have a different school board these days. It's partisan. Let's just take just a step back and think about how governance happens in this state. And the reason I've worked in governor's offices, so I like the CEO, the executive branch, you know, who's elected statewide to have some say over education.
Right.
Will you remind our listeners and jump in here, Shireen, as you'd like to, but I always think that one of the greatest secrets that people don't know is how little a governor has to do with education in the state, even though they all run on education platforms.
Right. That's a good point. And I think Utah's constitution, which lays out the governance, is rather, if you can be somewhat unique, but it is unique in that it almost, some people have said, the school board wants to be a fourth branch of government, mm-hmm. which is not really true. But there is the provision in the Utah constitution for the legislature to establish and maintain but the state school board to have general control and supervision.
Yeah. So the governor doesn't appoint school board members. We know that. It's an election. It's an election. The governor appoint the superintendent?
No.
Does
the
not.
The state school board elects
the superintendent. So, Shireen, I sat in so many cabinet meetings of a governor, and education is not on the table.
No. Yeah. That to me feels like a mess.
It's the biggest share of the state budget.
Yeah.
And the chief executive isn't. You know, I mean, they try. In my experience, the biggest policy lever a governor has is the bully pulpit because mm-hmm. people listen to the governor, people watch the governor, people respond to a governor. But I think our listeners would find that interesting. So the power is a lot with the school board, but also we have a legislature that some would say micromanage, do they not?
That's my opinion. But I think it's people have said a lot of these things already, but everybody thinks they're an expert in schools.
Mm-hmm.
People will give realtors their due and doctors their due and even dentists and those other kinds of professions, even some of the people that are the legislators who have or work in trades. But everyone's a teacher. Mm-hmm. And I think our culture sort of builds that. Many people teach on Sundays and they think that it's just a thing.
It's
that,
the same
that
as
if you're either a gifted teacher.
I've never heard that argument. That's interesting.
And it's it came from Mel Brown actually many
okay.
years ago.
All right, he was a former Speaker of the House.
Mel Brown, right? And he said, "Our culture does you a disservice." And he was actually a teacher in his early years.
Interesting.
But anyway, I think there is a misconception that teaching and education is not a specialty. But I have always been one who opposes the governor appointing school board members.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a mixture of models throughout the country. And probably the predominant structure is the governor appointing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in Utah, as odd as this sounds, there are many people who, many people on both sides of the aisle, back to your show title, that don't want the governor to appoint the board members. I think, and this is going to give away some of my biases, but here I go. I think the governor tends to appoint business people. I think he tends to appoint people that align with him politically, and he would never appoint someone like me.
Yeah.
And I think that even though my voice is small, it's singular, it is a voice for a different point of view than the governor's point of view.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I've heard that there are not enough votes in the legislature to make a governor-appointed board right now because many people on the far side of the aisle, the other side of the aisle, also like their voices. They're
heard
more
yeah.
extreme, and I say voices.
Shireen, we have just under a minute in this first segment, but give us your sense of this governance. What would you change? How would you do it?
Yeah, the only thing I think, just given the point that you just brought up, Natalie, is it does feel like we would benefit from having maybe a clearer connection between Are I'm sure you know the stat, but how many people choose their public schools? It's over 90% in the state.
90%.
Yeah, 90%. So when we think about 90% of kids being educated in this institution in our state, mm-hmm. to me it would make sense that is a real insight into what is happening across our geography. And to have that person in the cabinet or sitting with the governor, even if it is just to be in dialogue, that feels like it could be a really insightful opportunity, especially given this kind of separation of branches. I think that there could be good benefits that come from something like that, but I'm sure I could think of other policy changes I would make.
Well, in the next segment, we're going to talk about the Utah Fits All Scholarship. Will be a lively conversation.
That's
so
right.
Stay tuned, everybody.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on Utah Public Radio. We love to hear from listeners like you. If you would like to send us a comment, email bsotapodcast@gmail.com. That's bsotapodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner, and I'm so excited today, Shireen Gourbani, to have Carol Lear from the Utah State Board of Education in her second term, but here on the program today to help us understand education better in this state.
Yes. Well, there's a lot going on in education. I think, you know, many of us have been following the conversations and controversies around everything from bathrooms to what flags can be to if we can have the Ten Commandments in our schools and if teachers should be armed, for example. But so many of those issues that I think are kind of flashpoint issues, the biggest one, I think, has to be the voucher program. So the state, can you talk us through what the state did, what they developed? And then we know that there's a lawsuit now. So I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about what happened and then what brought the lawsuit forward.
Wow. Yes.
I know, it's a lot.
Yes. The state's tried to pass voucher programs since 2007. And of course, the first voucher program that was passed was struck down through a referendum. And the voters overwhelmingly supported no vouchers. And that was by a 70% majority. So many years since the legislature's tried tuition tax credits or other similar voucher. They've had two voucher programs for students with special needs that have been expanded to siblings of those students. And so there's been a lot of sort of encroachment on the public money with voucher programs anyway.
And can I just interject there, Carol? So this is the movement afoot to have more choice in education, to empower parents to take the money that they use either in the public schools or somewhere else. And for whatever reason, we have a Republican state that's very big on that idea and has now passed a voucher program.
Right. Exactly.
Well, and I like how you said school choice, because we know that most people don't really have a lot of choice, right? Uh-huh. Geography is often what's dictating choice, where they live. Uh-huh. But then there's also this kind of, I think, piece that I would like to be explicit about, which is that we are taking tax dollars, giving them to individuals who can turn around and give them to private institutions.
Right.
So it's taking your public dollars and putting them into private institutions.
And to put numbers to it, $80 million.
Yes, a total for
total
the
of $80
years,
million.
A little over that, actually.
10,000
students.
Recipients.
$8,000 per student. Per student, not per family.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of money.
But you can see, Shireen, why this would be popular to some households that can get this much money to go do what they'd like to do with their kids for education. Not whether it's appropriate to use public money in this way, but you can see why it's popular.
Oh, don't doubt. So I think I've disclosed on this program before, but I send my kid to a private school and we absolutely applied for it. And the reason that we applied for it, we did not get it because we didn't qualify. But I think that if that resource is there for me, I'm like, then why wouldn't we apply for it? Right. Like I fundamentally disagree with it. But I also understand why families would do that.
And it tells me that your income is higher than 200% of the federal poverty level.
Correct.
Because I think it's right, Carol, that every single
child qualified under the low income exception.
Which was a huge relief to me.
Me
all
too.
Right? So I'm right of center.
Yeah.
Whatever. I'm in the political middle. But I'm a registered Republican. I've been a Republican my entire professional life. And the main thing I was watching for is I didn't want to see public money
go to someone like me.
Yeah, going to wealthy individuals to spend as they like.
I agree.
I wanted to give, if I could have anything redeeming in this, it would be that a low-income family now has more freedom to do something they think is good for their kids.
I can understand that. I don't agree with it, but
I got eye rolls in the studio, everyone.
Yes. So yeah. Tell us about the lawsuit.
Eye rolls.
Yes.
I have to say I have to make one comment about the choice issue. If you look at education, and this is why I started the way I did, as a community service, it's not just by that standard. Why don't grandparents have choice? Why don't, and we're all taxpayers, why doesn't a grandparent be able to take that money and use for their child? Or why don't I get my piece of the police budget? I never have the police to my house. I don't depend on them. They give me tickets. I don't like them for the most part. But if you believe it's a community service, I don't think you buy into this choice issue.
Commoditizing it in
right.
some way, yeah.
It's, and I do believe
you
it
get
is
this piece, you get this piece.
Right.
Yeah.
We benefit from the whole, yeah. all of us, grandparents.
And this is civil society,
taxpayers.
Constitutional republic,
right.
yep.
so
we all
social
to,
moral values.
I think that's a really important distinction to make, because I think if you start, as you say, commoditizing it, why don't we commoditize every single service we get? And I don't.
Well, we've done it in healthcare and it's working out great.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
I know.
Okay.
Well, and you know, the garbage service we get, I would rather pay somebody to take my garbage. I don't have a family of 10.
Right.
So anyway, I digress.
May I just do another finer point for our listeners? So you've got this money, you're getting, you know, if you qualify, up to $8,000 per student. And you can not only go use it at a private school, you can go use it at a private religious school.
Yes, you can.
Yeah. So to give some color commentary on that, because now you start blending public money with faith money.
And really, the U.S. Supreme Court's moving in that direction anyway. We saw a case yesterday come down where, and it was interesting because there was one case out of the Oklahoma Supreme Court that went in the opposite direction of the Supreme Court speaking to a voucher program in Maine. And I won't belabor those, but the Supreme Court's moving in that direction anyway, this Supreme Court. Mm. So I am really less concerned, and or maybe I'm just see as, you know, a fool's errand, to complain about the money going to religious schools. Although I just have to comment, that means all religious schools. If the
Satanists open the school.
Yeah, the Satan special school opens its doors, that this money could go to them. My bigger concern is this money can go to all kinds of private services. It can go to tutoring. It can go to karate
lessons,
dance lessons, swim lessons. And there, the other piece of it.
Okay, I just have to pause there because you just think how radically different that is. So I'm sending my child to public schools. I'm contributing to the public good, you know, keeping an infrastructure in place for civil society. But there's a treasured few that can go use that money for karate lessons.
Yeah.
That seems, I mean, why did they go that broad, Carol?
I think it's an exaggeration of the parent choice discussion. Mm-hmm. And it also, some people have said it was to support homeschoolers. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I agree with that. But even all of that said, if there was accountability, I would probably, you said your concern level was remedied as it went mostly to mm-hmm. low-income mm-hmm. families, mm-hmm. which I would argue the values they set in Utah, where there are big families, is not a really seriously low income.
Mm-hmm.
But I am concerned that there's no accountability. The legislature has made a big deal of students having to take regular standardized tests and grade schools.
Yeah.
And
so I'll make a prediction, though.
Okay, let's go.
You know, I mean, I'm having this conversation with a lot of business leaders that we make a lot of, we jump to a lot of conclusions in today's world, in today's economy. Let's go through a recession. Let's go when state budgets are tight. Mm-hmm. And when they see this money used in this way, yep. watch the accountability rise significantly. That's just my prediction is that the accountability you're not seeing right now will come back to haunt, you know, decision makers.
Yeah.
And they'll put in the accountability because money becomes so scarce and there's so many needs during a recession, particularly a prolonged one.
And see, my concern is it's hard to unring that bell. Once you start
to use a school metaphor,
yes,
good on
exactly.
you.
To once you start down that road of lack of accountability, and the law reads explicitly. I'm going to tell you a quick story. The law reads explicitly that students enrolled in public schools cannot take this voucher. Well, I know of personally, and I'm not one of who's a fan of anecdotes, but I know personally of an individual who said, I'm just going to apply anyway. My child needs more services to help his ADHD. Enrolled in public school, this parent's child is. Applied for the voucher, got the voucher. As far as anybody knows, this parent will be able to use that voucher.
Right. Interesting. Okay.
So, yeah, I'm wondering if we can talk about maybe some of the big themes.
One I had is we have this Alpine School District that's been talking about dividing. And mm-hmm. so you've got this movement afoot to have more school districts. If I remember right, we have like 41 school districts.
Exactly.
41. Well, it's been a burr in my side for some time because, you know, I think it's inefficient, right, to have like a Eureka. Do we have a Eureka school district?
No, we don't. But we have a Tintic school district.
Oh, Tintic. So I'm getting the central place confused with the region. But I would be in favor of fewer school districts for administrative reasons, efficiency reasons.
And the reason...
This is someone who's in the Murray School District, which doesn't make any sense because I love the Murray School District.
But let me also say that there are states, smaller states, mostly in the East, 350 school districts in New Jersey. I think that's right.
Crazy.
It is. Sometimes students don't even live in their districts, and they have to figure out how to send the money to other places. So 41 is pretty
We've been holding the line.
Low. It's not a big number. And going back to a previous comment, one of the reasons, and I used to, in private practice, I represented a lot of school districts. But I really like the small school districts because they're the community center.
Yeah.
In North San Pete, in South San Pete, in Sevier, in Wayne School
Did you hear
district.
What you just said, though? There's a North and a South San Pete. And I think the same in Summit County. Is that right?
That's right. There's Park City, and there's North Summit and South Summit.
Okay. I mean, to me, that's a little crazy.
But you'd be taking
imagine
away.
Imagine if there were that many health departments, you know, because you're just in the county.
Yeah.
So anyway.
I'm wondering this. If you could think about just some of the biggest challenges that you see on the horizon. So I think about schools as really critical in our conversations about poverty. When we think about feeding children, when we think about, I know mental health is a big issue. If you think about one or two big issues that you wish people were paying attention to, perhaps instead of conversations about bathrooms or trans kids playing sports, what do you really think are the biggest areas of concern, maybe two big areas of concern people should pay attention to?
I think one big area of concern is our lack of people who want to be teachers.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Teacher shortages, teacher motivation.
And they leave quickly.
Yeah.
And I was a cipher. I was one of those taught for 5 years and then I left for other things. But that has changed dramatically over the years. And I think we need teachers who have some experience and we need teachers who have a depth and breadth of knowledge. It is rocket science to teach not your child, Shireen, not Natalie's grandchild. They'll be just fine. Teaching them to read is not a problem. But you teach an English language learner to read. That is rocket science.
Yes.
We don't have those teachers, and they're not staying in the profession.
And give us one more.
I have to say, we need to do better.
We have to.
And in paying them more and providing a better climate for teaching. Second issue is probably if we love our children, and we're a state that recognizes we have big families, and we embrace that, and we love that, then we have to pay for big families.
Yeah.
And that costs more money.
Yeah.
You can't do the Costco model. No offense to Costco, but you can't. You've got to be in, and they want choice at the same time.
Yeah.
Choice is expensive.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
choice is expensive, and big families are expensive. I love that. I embrace that. But
we have to plan for it.
We need, and it sounds like I'm a whiner to the legislature, but we need to pay an excessive amount of money if we want choice and we want
quality
big families
quality
and
education.
Quality. And we want quality teachers in our schools.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your perspective. I hope that the listeners learn more about the state school board and why these races are so important. But I'll kick it back to you.
Thank you. Let's put some thought to it and make a better state. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. The program's produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks for listening.